Canadian Loretta Henderson had it all, a successful career, a home she'd built herself, and a committed relationship. One day, she decided to give it all up and go cycling around the world, solo. I'm Amaya Williams, and today on Touring Talk, Loretta's story. I begin our interview by asking Loretta what inspired her to set off cycle touring.
I wasn't a cyclist, and I'd actually never even met a bicycle tourist. And eventually I just decided that I was going to give it a try. Wow, this is phenomenal. I might as well just go where I want to go and connect the dots and sort of cycle around the world sort of thing. So I've been coming up ever since from New Zealand. So crossing through Oceania, Asia, the Middle East, and into Africa. Now I'm in Ethiopia.
Now you said in the beginning that you're not a cyclist. What inspired you?
I had a book, basically, that I just could not stop reading. And the adventure, I think it was Stephen Lord's book, Adventure Bicycle Touring Book.
Adventure Cycling Handbook, yeah.
Yes, yes, that's it. And, you know, so, like, I had, you know, I had a career, and I built myself a house, and boyfriend, and, like, all these things you think you're supposed to have, but... almost when I threw that last nail into that house, I was like, wow, I'm from Canada, but I'd been living in Alaska, and I really just didn't want to be that far north anymore. So I waited a year, and I just kept reading that book, and eventually I just decided, you know, I have no idea if I can ride a bicycle anywhere, but I could definitely just try, and so I just eventually just decided to try. And and it's kind of gotten out of hand because it's now 3 years later, and I'm in Africa, but definitely loving it, and it's an amazing way to see the world.
So do you remember back on those very first days? What was it like?
Kind of just awestruck. Like, I honestly did not know if any of it was possible. I'm still not even sure any of this is really possible, but I just basically remember it just grinning over the handlebars in the freezing rain, just thinking, wow, this is just absolutely phenomenal.
So did you have any fears or any apprehensions when you first set off?
You know, in some strange way, like, not really, because I think I was just sort of so entirely new at it that I was just like, wow, okay, yeah, okay, this is happening. All right, I guess this is possible. For the most part, you know, most of the world, most of the people in the world are really, really supportive of bicycle touring and really friendly and super cool about our free camping and all those things. So it really just, it usually works out okay.
And now I was looking through your blog and I found that you mentioned that Mongolia was one of your absolute favorite countries. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Mongolians basically invented camping, in my opinion. They're nomadic. Their roots are nomadic, and so they're natural travelers. They live in essentially modified tents. They live in yurts. So, like, you show up as, like, a traveler on a bicycle, and there's just, like, an immediate connection with everyone. And I did my best to learn, like, the Mongolian language, but the throaty sounds are super hard, but they work with their herds in the fields, and they use, like, sign language. So all of our silly traveler charades that we do when we don't know the words, that's how they communicate. And so it was just an awful lot of fun, and ended up actually spending some time with a shaman, with just by accident, a Siberian shaman up near the Russian border. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I had a run-in with some wolves, and they kept saying, the people are so nice, they kept saying, you know, careful, Mrs. Crazy Wolf, eat woman's face. And apparently there's been some kind of incident with, like, a wolf that eating some woman's face. And so it just, I don't know, it just became like, it was just like cycling through the most wonderful, fun adventure. And it's just a wonderful place. I will say that the roads, They are building new roads, but there isn't much to navigate on through there. And there isn't really roads. And so I always kind of describe it as like navigating through a bowl of spaghetti, because you just pick one route and you just pick a trail and just go with confidence that it leads like somewhere. Because there isn't really much to follow, especially not through the Gobi crossing. But yeah, but every person you see, everyone is super nice, and yeah, it's just fun. Yeah.
And you were able to do a lot of wild camping while you were in Mongolia.
Yeah, I was pretty much camping like the entire time.
And how does that work out as a woman on your own camping?
It works out okay. I mean, I know a lot of like couples, and I've met a lot of people who usually camp with families. I kind of hide. I sort of figure the less people who know what I'm up to, the better off. But in Mongolia, like almost every morning, a man on a horse would come visit me. And I usually would just like share my map and just show what I was up to. And, you know, my language skills are kind of limited. So sometimes we'd like chew bubble gum or just hang out. But almost every day, and it was always like super friendly. Half the time they were just checking if I was okay. And it really didn't matter how much I was hiding, I would still get a visitor almost every morning.
Now, I did say that you were mentioning when you went through India that you did have a few problems with the local guys there in northern India.
Well, I do think there's some people in the world that mistake me for a porn star. This is true. But most of it just makes me laugh. And none of it is really that big a deal. Most of the male attention stuff that happens, I mean, I'm laughing most of the time. I mean, I smell like armpit most of the time. I haven't showered in who knows how long. My hair is a mess from the tent. I haven't seen a mirror in who knows how long. And someone's standing there flirting with me, and I think it's funny.
The best thing is just to keep a good sense of humor about it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about advice. Just do whatever works with you.
Now, another country that you went through, which I think some people will find surprising, is Iran. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences bicycle touring in Iran?
When I crossed into Iran, they weren't quite as happy about what I was doing. If anything, it's in some areas it's a bit odd for a woman to be traveling alone and on a bicycle. And so they just pretty much, yeah, they were just really fairly adamant that you know, private security cars and all these things, but we were kind of laughing at me and stuff and
Oh, wait, did I get that right? Private
bit of
security
a
guards.
shocking. What's that?
Did I catch that? Did you say you had private security guards?
But I turned them down, which,
This was in Iran. They were offering you a private escort.
you know, there's a lot of cyclists love Iran, and so all over the internet, and I've read a million times that cyclists love Iran, and it's because the people in general there are so welcoming, like so welcoming. You don't get very far down the road without a family inviting you to camp and or drink tea or and that for the most part is the best description of Iran. But the province that's near Pakistan, because there's been some problems, they have, I was told, they have like special orders there. And so yeah, it took I had to really do some talking with them. Yeah, I had to kind of do some talking with them to kind of turn down some of the security. And then yeah, and then I eventually you know, I have no problem with like not cycling if it's security. So I took the private car and all these things, but they were kind of trying to stay with me, and I kind of had to ditch them, I will admit.
And
And
how did
I
you
did.
ditch the security detail in Iran?
What eventually happened was they, you know, they kept taking the bike, and the final time when they took pandemic, they dropped them, and I finally just decided, okay, this is just really not working. I need to go find cooler people. And honestly, Iran has a wonderful reputation for hospitality from everyone I've ever talked to. And I was like, where are the cool people? And so I eventually kind of hopped on my bike and just let the police follow me. And I went to a guest house And when I got to the guest house, the man there was so amazing. And he just literally just grinned at me and he was like, "Thank you for coming here. I am so glad you came." He gave all of the I was with a whole bunch of police at that point. He offered them all tea and everything, and then they all left. And the minute that door shut, the guest house owner said to me, he was like, "You know, they do this to a lot of people from here on in Iran. It's you know, the country you've heard about." And I was kind of just so grateful to him. I was just like, "Okay, great, good news."
All right, now what about the famous headscarf issue in Iran? How did you deal with that?
It's culturally, you know, it's Sharia law, so you have to. I mostly, you know, yeah, in Pakistan as well, actually, but I ended up cycling in Pakistan, actually, in men's Pakistani pajamas. Okay, so like I was just sit there laughing. I'm like, okay, not only am I like an oddball, like alone on my bicycle, I'm now a cross dresser. Awesome. But the reason I ended up in those clothes was I was just trying to cover everything as much as possible. And it just ended up to be super comfortable. And for most of Iran and Pakistan, I actually just had like a buff on my head, which for sunshine, I usually wear one on my head anyway, for sun. And then in Iran, I kept the buff on my head, but you sort of are supposed to have like the full headscarf. So in some areas I just had the buff on my head, and then in other areas I would just put a headscarf on top of it. I don't know. I got it caught on a tree once and the whole head contraption fell right off. And people were, yeah, really kind of looking at me like, "What are you doing?" And I just sort of was like, this is just too much. But yeah, but for the most part, it's okay. Although I could not wait to get it off my head. It's just we're just not used to it, you know, just not used to it. And yeah, it's just too many things on your head while you're cycling.
Okay. Now, I think another country which probably would strike most people as a challenge for cycling is Sudan, and you've just been to that quite recently. Can you tell us a little bit about the ride through Sudan and how your Africa tour is going so far?
You know, Sudan is a surprise in that if I'm gonna like start rating places I've been, Sudan is pretty high up at the top for wonderful places for bike touring. Roads are well, first I really like deserts, and that's a Sahara crossing. And so the road is amazing. Easy, beautiful, beautiful free camping just about wherever you want. It's really, really dry. The people are amazingly nice. You know, in most Muslim countries, people are just remarkable, like just so hospitable. And Sudan is no different. So the people are just super nice.
And how do you deal with the water issues in the desert?
That's the other thing about Sudan. There's no need to have like, you know, I have a water bag. I usually actually cycle with an enormous amount of extra water, but in Sudan there's water every about every 50 kilometers there's water or really simple food. And the food there is very simple but perfect for cycling. It's basically just like mixed beans with onions and some spices and then homemade bread like everywhere you go. And it's really cheap, very filling, and really healthy.
Sudan, the people are lovely. You crossed over into Ethiopia, and you probably had a different sort of welcome. What happened in Ethiopia?
Yeah, you know, anyone who's ever read on the internet about Ethiopia doesn't really have a very good reputation, basically for children's shenanigans of rock throwing and sticks and stuff. But you know, for the most part, it is okay. I've been stopping a lot here, and I've just been shaking everyone's hand, and it seems to work. I've had quite a few jobs working with children, and so I just stop and shake their hand, and just, you know, they've got a stick in one hand, a rock in the other, and you know, shaking my hand, and It seems to work, and it's not that big a deal, really. Big stretches of road that are really friendly with all the children and all the people, and then other stretches of road that it gets a little more intense. And I actually found out from a man in one of the villages that the government has put an education program in the schools about these rock throwing things. And so there's large stretches of road where the kids are really not doing it. Yeah, and this man told me it's because the schools are teaching them.
Now, I just wonder a little bit about your bicycle. People are always curious if people have bicycle problems and how you go about repairing them. Are you an expert mechanic?
I have a Thorn Raven touring bicycle that has a roll off. Expensive bicycle for a short tour, but I've been on the road for so long and virtually like I've had almost like not much at all happen. And so cost wise, it's kind of made up for itself.
All right, now I one other thing I've noticed is that you travel extremely light for someone who's on a long tour. I think you just carry the two back bags. Is that right?
Yeah, I have three on the back right now, but I started out with five, like most people have, and then I went to four. And what I really found, actually, what I wanted was three. So for a while, I had one front pannier empty, and I was just looking at it, going, "Man, you know, this is just bothering me." I'm like, "It's not that it felt unbalanced, but I was like, this is just like I have one empty pannier." And I was like, well, let's see what happens. And I just kept touring basically, and I just found I just wasn't using like so many things.
So what's your trick, Loretta? Because everybody else has so much stuff. What's your trick? What have you pared it down to?
You know, I think, you know, I well, I met actually this Kiwi bike tourist once who basically just couldn't believe it. Like he was just like just couldn't believe it. And we ended up basically on two different beds, and like we ended up putting all of his stuff and all of my stuff from our panniers and compared every single thing him and I had to figure out how he had like, you know, five bags and twice my weight and I had three. And what he had that I didn't have was he had a really big bag of like extra like electronic stuff, and then he also had like a whole ex bunch of tools and bicycle parts that I didn't have. Like he had like part of a derailleur, and he could have built a whole new bicycle. And I didn't have that stuff.
Are you not carrying any tools?
Oh no, of course I have things do
Oh,
break,
okay.
but
Just the basic
yeah,
stuff, though.
I've twisted bolts and my external bottom bracket's open. I've, you know, switched the chain, and I have a front brake problem that I'm always adjusting. And yeah, no, I just have like just basically like a multi-tool, and then I have my roll-off tool. I have a bag of tools. I just don't think it's as big as everybody else's. And then I obviously have, you know, all the, you know, spare tubes, and I have every basically everything I need on me at all times.
And what about electronics then? Are you not carrying a computer?
Oh no, I have a computer. Of course I do. I've named my little laptop Prozac because basically writing until I laugh could probably keep me bike touring for the rest of my life. Yeah.
Okay, so how many kilos are you carrying? Do you know by chance?
I do have four seasons and full camping. And so, you know, some of the stuff I have, because, you know, I've sight like Western China, you know, all of the mountaintops, it was, you know, freezing. And, you know, like my water froze up in the desert. My water was freezing in China, and actually in Mongolia, it fully was freezing during the day and not unfreezing. And so I've definitely cycled in the snow. And what I do have is for rain gear, I have Gore-Tex pants. They're from Alaska. And I just sort of, you know, layer those on if it gets too cold. And it seems to work out okay. I think maybe people have bulkier sweaters or something. I'm not sure, but everything does fit in my three little bags, and it's four seasons, and
I'd like you to do some consulting work for us so we can carry less.
yeah, I don't know, books maybe. My
Oh, I don't
computer
know.
loaded
I
with
don't
things.
have books. I've got a Kindle.
Oh, you get Kindle. I don't have a
Yeah,
Kindle.
and it's still really heavy, but we like our little luxuries. Now, I'm curious too, because you're a pretty rigorous writer. Can you tell us about a typical writing day for you?
So no, part of the reason I think I got rid of a lot of stuff is I'm a pretty hyper person. I have too much energy. I'm not the biggest person, and I basically can't sit still. And that fully applies to how I cycle. So part of maybe why I have less stuff is I like to fly. I like to just cruise around, and just have fun. And so, usually about 100K, but I don't know. I left Cairo. I really just wanted to get out of the city and just go. I didn't want to wait it out. And there was basically like a sandstorm. So, I just left Cairo and, it was so windy for all of Egypt and all of Sudan. And the sandstorm and the wind was at my back and I ended up just flying. Like I was hardly pedaling. I was, I'm not really actually too into the techie thing. But you know, you can look at road signs and whatnot and realize how far you've gone. But it's mostly just 'cause I'm enjoying it and I don't have a lot of weight. And if you get up when the sun gets up and ride all day, that's sort of what happens. I usually end up going over 100.
Okay. Well, so what are kind of the really biggest challenges that you faced as a woman cycling alone or just in general cycle touring?
You kind of just get used to things. I mean, it's just, I don't know, every day there's, you know, something else happening or, yeah, every day just kind of poses its own little challenges, like on like a daily basis. I wouldn't really say there's one like overall big challenge.
Is it a challenge to spend so much time alone?
That's a challenge. Yeah, that's a challenge. It's always great when I meet other cyclists. Sometimes I do cycle with other people if they're heading down in the same direction. And that's always really great. And camping with other people.
So, now the other side of the challenge is really what you love about bicycle touring. And you said you really love the physical aspect of riding. Well, what other things do you find really enjoyable about this type of travel?
It's a really, you know, wonderful way to meet people and learn about cultures. I mean, your pace is so slow that you know, like sometimes I meet travelers and they're like, oh, I think I'm gonna arrange like a homestay or something, and I sometimes giggle because I feel like my whole life is a homestay sometimes when it comes to cultural like enrichment. And that's sort of what happens on bike touring is you very much end up very learning a lot about different cultures. And the freedom aspect of it is just amazing.
If you could maybe give some tips or advice, because there just are not that many women who are out there cycling alone. I know, I mean, there are obviously some. There's Eleanor Mosman, and of course, there's Take On Africa, of course. There was Helen Lloyd, who cycled through Africa. But other than that, there are
In
not that
fact,
many.
Emily Chappell just crossed, she just crossed Iran through Pakistan. Interestingly enough, on my website, I started, it's called Wow Women on Wheels. And the reason that I started that was because when I kind of wanted to do this, I did look on the internet and I really couldn't find any other like solo women. And I was like, is this even possible? I have no idea. And then when it took all 18 months, I think it was, until I met another solo woman on a bicycle. And I just basically became convinced. I was like, there's got to be more of us out here. So on my website, on the Wow Women on Wheels wall, there's now, I think it's 30 or 40 solo women bicycle tourists. There's actually a lot more of us than I think people
What does
think.
it take for a woman to set off alone? What qualities does she need?
Yeah, I guess maybe a sense of humor. And also too, you know, I'm not so sure about like planning like what's ahead on your road, because we don't know. And so, like I've always promised myself that if I'm cycling down some road and if it starts feeling sketchy or something doesn't feel right, you know, just get off the road, turn back, do what you gotta do. And so maybe some advice would be like stay open. You know, just stay open to what's ahead of you, and you know, don't be afraid to you know, switch your route or reconsider what your original thought was and all of those things. Because, you know, with route planning, like we have these great ideas in our head of which road it'll turn out. But in the end, we don't know how any of it's going to turn out until we actually just stand there. And so if it feels right, I go for it. If it doesn't feel right, I change the plan.
Okay, yeah, that's great advice for people. What will happen post-bicycle tour? Do you think you can go back to just a regular old life, or has bicycle touring changed you forever in some way?
Sometimes I think that I've had such an amazing, an amazing grasp of freedom that, you know, no one's going to want me back in that other world anymore. I'm really not sure. We'll just have to sort of see what happens.
So have you got any other last thoughts on bicycle touring or tips that you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, anyone can pretty much get a bicycle and go anywhere. I think it took me a very long time to figure that out. But anyone really can. There's not much to it, and it's an awful lot of fun. And that's probably about it.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll leave it at that very encouraging note. Thank you, Loretta, for your time. Thank you for talking with us here on Touring Talk, and we wish you all the very best on your ride down to Cape Town.
That wraps it up for today's edition of Touring Talk. Thanks to Loretta and other female solo cyclists, more and more women have been inspired to set off on solo tours. Be sure to check out Loretta's Women on Wheels page for more stories and links to blogs. Loretta's entertaining and inspiring website is skalatitude.com. That's skalatitude.com, skalatitude.com. Be sure to give a listen to the rest of the Touring Talk interviews and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you like what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. That will really help us out. Well, we hope you enjoyed the show. You can connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search for World Biking. Or leave us a comment on the blog and let us know what you're thinking. You can also email us at worldbiking@gmail.com. I'm Amaya Williams for Touring Talk. Again, thanks for listening, and we wish you an adventure-filled week.